I'm Lauren, an alcoholic. My survival date is October 23rd of 2000. My home group was the first Christian people's group. For 9 years, it was the Midtown group in D.C. And 8 years ago, I was actually Tampa Bay Yankees group. Really nervous. Everybody's looking at me. I was just, yeah, ready. Get all weird joy. I'm extremely self-conscious, you know. I know these Midtown people are going to freak me out, but I would do the best I can. Crazy, but I'm not trying to speak up. There's a lot of people that make people laugh. I'm not one of them. I have a really boring story. I did not have a big, exciting driven story. I was mostly alone by myself. It was very sad and pathetic. So the rest of my story was very sad and pathetic. So, to put that out there, it kind of feels like, when is the funny part coming? Because it's not funny. I do have this amazing connection. They're really good people. I grew up in Miami and I moved to DC. They're really normal people. Like, you know, they care about other people, they go, they're there to help people. And I was an only child, I was neurotic as a child. And that doesn't make me alcoholic, it just made me neurotic, you know. But when I was like 5, I started stealing other people's teddies at school, just, you know, because, you know, like, take out one person's teddy, put in somebody else's teddy, so get in trouble, you know. And I don't even know what that was. It wasn't, you know, to like steal their stuff. I just needed something, right? I was a weird kid, and I started lying. My mom would give me vitamins. I didn't like the green vitamins. They tasted bad. So the first cancer trial, I'm in the car, my mom gave me green vitamins. And instead of like taking this thing, I put it in the bottom of the trash can. And she was like, what do you do with this? And she was like, where's the vitamin? So I took it. And she like dumped up the trash can and there's the vitamin. You know, and I remember thinking like, oh, I got it. You know, but then it was just downhill from there. And, you know, I mean, like, again, I was just a weird kid. I did weird things. And I was well-liked. I had fun growing up. And I was not, like, you know, unlikable. But sometimes just, you know, everybody else seems to be having a good time when I went to school. And I would, like, look at them. I didn't feel the way they felt. You know, they were, like, 10 in the monkey bars. And I kind of felt like, I'm really strange. You know, but they were, like, crazy and things. So I just felt weird. And I couldn't explain it. You know, I can't see really normal people, so I couldn't really, like, tell them, like, hey, when people sit in the monkey bars, I feel strange. You know, I, there wasn't something I could do. And when I was 9, I was visiting my aunt down in Miami, and she was, like, the great alcoholic aunt. I didn't know this was really time. My parents didn't drink. But I'd gone down with her, and it took me out one night with one of my friends. And the first thing she did was get back to the station and start getting drunk. And I had never seen a drunk person before. I mean, I had never, my parents, my dad, like, what? Once you have no juice, you know, now that's how I feel. You know, my mom is like half a glass of wine every 6 months and passed out on the couch. Like, she's too tired, she feels it. You know, so I would never seen a drunk person before. I didn't know what that was. And then I started to get drunk and we went and taking up roads. So it's like this loud place for the Friday night. And she started drinking. And it started to get weirder. And the friends actually just kind of been awkward around me because we weren't really close. And then once she started to drink, she started to open up and she started to become so fun and boisterous person. And you know, there's only one taking up clothes, and she's buying things for me, and, you know, she's like smelling really bad, and then she like threw up on herself, you know, but she's still running around and having a really good time. And I remember being so grossed out by that, you know, because it was so gross, but there was part of me that was like, she's really happy, and I'm not really happy. And then she was so passionate about that. You know, maybe she was like, maybe he's going, maybe it's staring at us, maybe else is staring at us, and it didn't matter, you know, because she was so happy. And then I started to remember, like, drinking the drugs, you know, so I tried to pay her by the not let her out, you know, and we finally, like, got a hold of somebody that would come pick us up, and she'd be us back to house, and, you know, over the course of the night, I had left all these messages from my dad, like, there's no drinking, and then she's so drunk, and I don't know what to do. So by the time she got back to house, there were, like, 100 messages from this 9-year-old freaking out, and so she got sent to rehab. You know, my parents don't drink. She decided, like, somebody with her daughter drinking is, you know, too much for them. So they couldn't really have. And, you know, I didn't really know, but that was the first time I had ever seen her, you know, and I got home from that summer. I was really proud, mostly neighborhood boys, like my older brothers, in the store about a cognac. We drank it in the woods. And I remember thinking, this is why she's happy. This is why she's going to care. This gets right all over herself. So I discovered, and she didn't care. And obviously, we're not pregnant every night, but there's something so wonderful and magical. You know, it was like that thing, I figured that all the girls felt that on the monkey bus, you know, when they're like, their friends were together and they felt a part of, like, that's how they felt, you know, they felt like feeling inside. And they started feeling alcoholic because of those, you know, bad cabinets and people had either brothers that could drink. And it was so wonderful how I felt. And I wasn't drinking, you know, bad times were like really loud. I just felt so good. I mean, I felt like it's okay, you know, to be hanging out with these people, you know. And then, you know, somebody can't tell. And at that point, like, I was having, like, weird stuff. Like, I was, like, punching and stuff. And I was really, because I thought I was, like, really spacey as a kid. So I just, like, kind of sit down class and, like, spacey, really drunk. Well, now we found out that I was, like, epileptic. I was having seizures all the time. Like, but we didn't know all the time. So we thought I was, like, a dick. And, a bond and co-head for this kind of thing that was really supposed to be. And so I started changing parents, and I started to feel better, you know, I started to do better in school, and I thought, well, okay, like, it's my thought, you do better in school, everything like that, okay. And I started drinking more, and then we got to middle school, and at that point, I was playing sports, you know, I was really good at soccer, I was really good at basketball, riding horses, and I was, like, really active in a lot of things that I really liked doing, I really enjoyed them, I felt good when I was doing things like that, and, you know, I felt like a part of. But at the same time, like, I had the girls I played soccer with, you know, I was talking to my soccer team, and, you know, we'd hang out at soccer practice, and then after soccer practice, they'd all go up together, and I wasn't invited, you know? And I thought, like, it's okay, I can't. And, it was just, like, a once in a while thing at that point, you know, but there's something, like, I felt okay. I didn't care if they didn't invite me, you know, it was okay. You know, I got to middle school, and I found, and middle school was on the property of the high school, and I found if I did the high school book, I could get out that more often, you know. So it worked out really well. We rode the buses together, you know, so it was like, it's easy to go to high school boys, and, you know, we got more alcohol, and, I started drinking more, and people would be like, oh, so what did you do last night? You know, I'd be like, it'd be, you know, Tuesday morning, I'd be like, oh, I drank. And I started to be less, like, it's hot. You know, like, so everyone's going to drink on Monday nights, you know, when you have school the next day. And, I started to get that look of just, like, that's not okay. And I started to realize, like, you don't tell people what you do. You know, people say, like, what do you do? I can't say, that's what you do. You know? And, yeah, things started to kind of, like, unravel around me. I started to be really bad in school. I was never just a smart person or a very good school, but I was kind of like a solid B student. And you know, I started to not do so well, and, you know, I started to kind of understand, like, how to get out of things. And, you know, the best thing was, you know, what I thought BC was for, like, you know, bond stuff was a big deal, and I had a science test that I really wasn't going to pass, and it was like a big test, and, you know, both of them kind of bounced out, you know, and people from the high school, you know, I figured club from high school were, of course, you know, they found out, and it was a really bad time, but it was a science test out there, you know, so I delayed the afternoon the next day, because, of course, I didn't go home to study, you know, I went home drunk, and failed the test next day, so, you know, that was, like, the series in my life, you know, just the way I went up with it, and, you know, I was drinking more and more, and, you know, I was hanging out with these bad high school kids, and, like, just the bad kids, and, I was kind of a good kid, I looked really like a good kid, and, so by the end of, middle school, when I was, like, hiding my report cards from my parents, because I'd have, like, you know, a C in PE, maybe a B in PE, and then, like, B's and F's and everything else, and my parents would be like, so what's going on here? And, you know, both my parents have masters, you know, they're very smart, intelligent people, so to them, like, the thought of not doing well in school is really awful. And, things started to happen, like, a grand old time, you know, I was getting in trouble for stuff, and so I told them, you know, what a lot of people thought, like, the kids, the ones I'm hanging out with, they're bad kids. You know, and if I wasn't hanging around them, you know, I could do better. And, you know, I really believed that too. Like, I really thought, like, maybe it's just the people. You know, because there seem to be some consequences, but again, it wasn't like I was out doing wild and crazy stuff. So I was sitting alone at my home, drinking. And, so it wasn't, never really occurred to me that I was, like, feeling, like, you know, feeling consequences for drinking. I just didn't care about it. You know, it didn't matter to me. And, so I begged my parents to send me to different schools. So I removed the house and they sent me to private school. Well, summer before school, you know, I did dishes and I was teaching her stuff on the summer camp and, you know, so I was doing all that thing and, you know, I met this guy and he was straight up. So I still haven't dated myself, but this is back in the 90s. So I had people with big bad glasses on their hands. I was so old when I had to feel better, but big guy was coming to me and I was drinking a bunch of time, you know, he was like, I don't feel tired, I don't drink, I don't feel sick, I was like, well, it seems really good, but, you know, whatever he is, and I just didn't tell him I was drinking, and, I got into this new school, and I thought, like, I can reinvent myself, and I thought, like, make up who I want to be, because I figured that's what you go to school for, you know, just reinvent who you want to be. So I started school, and I said, I didn't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs, I don't do anything bad, you know, I'm very good, you know, just, I'm a good kid, and I made it like a week, and I tried for cheerleading, and I made varsity cheerleading, and I started to football party and got wasted, and I was back to the baby eyes. I don't remember the party, but, it was really kind of a chance, you know, I thought, I can't take it back now, but no. So it was a chance, and so good, and, everything was kind of just going dandy, and I was taking my time, and then, that Christmas, I was out drinking at a party, and we were wasted, and got in an accident. And I woke up in the emergency room at like 3 o'clock in the morning, looking up and my parents were standing over me and I thought, this cannot be good. You know, you're 13 years old, you're in an accident, parents, drunk, not good. And, but the good news was that, like, they had this really concerned look on my face and I thought, something's wrong, I won't get in trouble. You know, and then they had to stay like on my own. Like, oh, she got this big voice in my brain, you know. And I thought, my first thought was, you know, and they didn't. They never knew that my mother didn't drink. So I just keep sitting in my brain, you know. And I think most people, if they had a big growth in their brain, would think, I gotta change my life. Just like, change. My thought was, change my life's different. And, the accident had, like, loose all the stuff in my head, and I got physically really sick, and I was able to drink a lot more, because I didn't have to go to school. You know, I was 14 years old, and I no longer had to go to school, so I could drink a lot more. And, so there were these brain surgeries and, you know, stuff happened, but I feel like these pills and I was selling to people, so I could buy more alcohol, I mean, I was a mess. But, so they're holding pills so I could sell them to get more alcohol, and my parents would find them. And they would, like, tell the therapist, you know, because you go to counseling if you have all these health problems, and they would say things like, well, you know, she's going through these really traumatic problems right now, and when she gets over this, she'll stop thinking as much, and she won't do as many drugs, and everything will be okay. It's just a phase that kids go through when they're facing death, and they'll get over it. And I thought, like, somebody is allowing me to drink as much as I want to with zero consequences. So I told my parents I could drink, and it was okay, but it would go away, and I thought, like, this is fantastic. And so I could drink by myself, with no consequences. And I didn't go to it. My parents kind of freaked out about that one. But they didn't give me a time to talk to me again, because they kind of had, like, you know, I just thought she's facing death, and they're both. And, so I obviously didn't finish, you know, the next year and a half of school. So a year and a half later, I was drinking more and more. My health stuff had kind of dissolved itself a little bit, you know. So then my parents kind of very not okay with the world doing that. And, they were going to send me back to school, and I'm thinking a lot, and I knew that I couldn't go back to film school, you know, because I knew that I was doing that, and I had to change again, you know, I thought, what better way to change? Just kind of send me another school, you know, so my parents, what did they have to do? You know, I saved up this money, sent me to a different school, and I really had a new plan, like, I'd worked out a script of what I was going to say when I met everybody, like, this time, you know, it was real later, I can't just show that, because I was real, like, 2 years before that, you know, so I just kind of worked out of what I was going to say, and I got to school, I made it to, like, 7:45, so I at 8 o'clock, you know, and it was just two guys there, and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm new here, and I was like, let's go, and I did, and, you know, again, it was only kind of like, well, I guess it's really this, you know, I did that. Yeah, and two people knew. And I look back now and I'm like, I could have reasonably gone back and said, oh, I just, you know, just wanted to get drunk, you know. But in my mind, it was like, well, if everybody knows me, I was really drunk all the time. And, I drank because I was really uncomfortable when I wasn't drinking, you know. And when I drank, I felt like I could look at other people, you know. And I felt like it was okay to be me, you know. And there was nothing, like, terrifically wrong with me. And I really wanted something to be wrong. Like, I really was hoping that there's some trauma in my past that I was covering up, you know, that would give me a reason why I had the drink. You know, because I thought, like, people that have these really traumatic after childhood, they have a reason why they could drink. I didn't have any of that. I had this great childhood. You know, but I was so uncomfortable with life. You know, when I drank, I felt like, it's okay. You know, everything's going to be okay. And, you know, by the time I was 15 or 16 years old, I was walking around school with one of these big water bottles filled with vodka, and I got some like lemonade powder or iced tea powder because I thought somehow that would cover up the smell. Maybe you have a question, but I guess it works. And you know, then I had this weird thing that I never exhibited outside signs of drunkenness. I never went stumbled, I never showed my words, all this stuff, and I was able to drink a surprising amount of alcohol, which most alcoholics are, but turns out that really the growth in my brain was actually the type of defensive alcohol. I never got the outside effects of it. But you know, I didn't really drink a lot at a really young age, you know, which was awesome. It's fantastic. Like, I got to drink an awful lot of alcohol really, really quickly. And, I was so miserable when I woke up in the morning, you know, and that was just like a dualism to me, you know. I would drink to school, though, you know, and a couple of years into it, I would quit soccer, I quit food, and, well, I quit soccer with most things. I'd gotten physically removed from the band that I was at, told me I was a mess, you know, and couldn't come back. And, everybody drank, and here I was a mess, you know, and I couldn't come back. And I was a blackout drinker. I was just kind of a nasty, you know, and it wasn't like I did a whole lot. Like, I was not a particular violent drunk. I was not a nice person when I drank, you know. But in my mind, I felt like I was a nicer person, you know, because I felt like I could be along with people, and there was just that magic line for me. Like, if I was just drinking, I was a much nicer person, you know, because I felt like I was okay with the world. And then you would do that, like, threshold I cross and tell me, like, I was going to be off. And so I learned really early that you just drink alone, you know, and there's no consequences. And, I've been saying that a lot of women do that, you know, because it was really easy for me. Because when I would black out at parties, I never knew what was going to happen. You know, I often ended not well, you know. Most of the time, they were bad blackouts. You know, the reports I would get the next morning would not be something favorable for me. They were generally pretty awful, you know. And luckily, this was before there was a camera. You know, so there's not, you know, a whole lot. But, I mean, they wound up cameras. But luckily, you know, there's no Facebook. You know, I can't imagine. But, I learned that if I drank alone, you know, it would be okay. You know, and that kind of felt bad. You know, if I could just drink and be alone in my room, you know, some music, you know, and it's all romantic for me, you know, I would just find poetry. And again, like, I didn't have any reasons why I drank. You know, there was no reason why I drank other than I could not drink. And I would try all these different things. And one time I went to the Buddhist temple for a week when I was 14 because I thought, you know, some sort of spiritual connection could fix me. And I would go up and say, I had gone to YouTube and I was in, you know, choir and whatever, you would take stuff. And, you know, but I always went because I knew that if I stopped going to church, that they practiced the drinking, you know, and I knew that, like, if I kept going, they wouldn't touch me. And the good thing was, like, how did they smoke pot and drink when they were, like, you know, and, like, the youth group thing? You know, so I could, like, just run these lockouts or lock rooms and, like, drink with people. And, you know, I was always looking for somebody that would just, like, make it okay for me to drink the way I drank. You know, I always wanted somebody else that would feel the same way I felt, you know, and I really felt other people that actually felt the way I felt when they drank. Most people I drank with were just looking for a good time, you know, like the rhythm, you know, to get restored, you know, fun, I was fine, like, you know, I'm just looking for that feeling inside, that, like, it's gonna be okay. You know, by the time I was in middle school, like, you know, it didn't work out, the parents didn't look after the week, and, you know, the other kids were like, oh, it's okay, you can be part of the future, that's amazing, you know, whatever. You know, and I remember checking this, you know, you can't not have alcohol, you can't just take the alcohol, you cannot take that away from me. And, you know, I was always a really awkward kid, so, you know, when I speak out with people, it was really weird, because I was always really awkward, and I got really awkward when I speak out, and, you know, so it was a mess. And, you know, I would do anything to prevent getting in trouble for drinking. You know, I was taking So it was like at the beginning of all the weird high school stuff I had started. So I was drinking all the time, so I was throwing up all the time because I was drinking a lot and not eating, and you know. And so people started questioning me about stuff. But people started questioning me about like what's going on, you know. And I knew, I knew that people got in trouble for being alcoholics. You know, I did think I had gone to rehab and I got arrested and I was trouble, and I didn't want to be one of them. You know, so I had looked at like anorexia. And again, I'm not trying to belittle anybody that has an eating disorder by any means, but I had looked at what anorexia was and I like what people say in anorexia kind of thing. And so I told everybody that I was anorexic because I knew you couldn't get in trouble for being anorexic, but like if you were alcoholic and couldn't stop drinking, people got mad at you. You know, so I convinced everybody that I was anorexic, so I could like drink all the time, you know, and maybe that and it felt really bad for me that I'm so, you know, like, oh, it's so weird, like, don't talk about, you know, whatever with her, you know. I mean, I would do anything it took to, like, stay away from, you know, getting in trouble for things. I was a great one person when I saw him today. On the way here, I was just like, stand number one, drove me here. By the time I got him to drive me here, was that I told him I was in fat ass and told him. But actually, I ran through one of the posts with this car. Now, I feel really guilty, and on the way back, so I stopped and asked him how I could make that up. You know, because it's inexpensive ticket, it's way back. And they said that on the way back, you can actually carry the toll. So if you ever run a toll, they can let you carry that on the way back and do a receipt, and that way you can get a ticket tomorrow. So I'm a very guilty person. I don't do well with I'm not, I was not good at being bad. Like, I was always like, you know, when you're running from the cops on the golf course, you know, drinking on my toe, you know, I was so really bad, like, just the cop up stuff. I'd be like, go back to it, I'm so sorry. And this is why I told you that way, because it was so bad for me, because it's just a steady drinker. You know, I mean, it's not like, it's not good at being bad. And I was telling my mom a stoplight a couple months ago, and I sold the car, and I said I wasn't going to get a ticket, because, you know, I can't handle, like, the thought of them coming after me. I mean, for a red light around at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, I think it's going to be okay. But it's too bad, and I was really drunk. You know, my parents were these really good people, and I was terrified that they would be guilty of that. You know, they would feel guilty. Well, I'll get past my story, but. You know, so I really was afraid that they would like be upset. You know, this is like the advent of like cell phones and people had cell phones. They didn't, it was a very basic model, there's no screen, you just dial it, and I would always like have these calls where I'd like I can't tell my parents, I'm not asking machine to use my own phone and dialogues with me, and you know, I come home and it was awful. I always like put that alone, so I have no poker face, which is really the problem. But you know, so by the time I started him, still in high school, nobody wanted to be around me. I mean, even the guys I was drinking with would like bring me out to him and kind of like want to leave because I was just kind of gross, you know, like, nobody wanted to be around me a lot. And when I was staying on the classes, I was supposed to be like a junior in high school, I guess, and I had 6 high school credits. Four of which were PE because I played varsity sports, so you get varsity PE credits there. Then there was college and summer, so I had not one academic credit. I was an absolute high school loser. And so I was in school and they suggested I go to college at night because they were like, well, she needs to be smart. She just kind of had a plan herself, so I'm like, you know, this is the story of everything I do. But, you know, so I started taking these college courses at night. I was drinking all the time. I had nobody that wanted to be around me. It wasn't even like the friends I had grown up with. I really knew I was going to be with me at that time. And just taking these college courses at night, and, you know, because my theory was that it's adults. You know, it's not like young drinkers that are in like night class, like night school or college. And, you know, so there was one guy, he was 21, you know, and I instantly zeroed in on him because I knew, you know, he's 21. And in my mind, I was kind of yellow and I had bruises everywhere from my phone. I kind of thought, like, oh, I'm cute. You know, I can get out of here from him. And, you know, so I zeroed in on him. The teacher, like, told us up for writing something. And, he turned out to live right by the high school I went to. So I would go drink in school, my parent, and then go over to his house. And I would, like, do these school assignments. And all these other really hot 21-year-old guys would show up. You know, just, right? I mean, that's how I was a major loser. But so always guys would show up and they're like coming up to me. I thought, like, this is fantastic. You know, I didn't even know guys about the alcohol. And somehow there's no alcohol around, but they had these like great drinking stores. I mean, like crashing cars, beating up their, you know, friends, like getting arrested. There's no alcohol, you know, and there's like a lot of stuff. I could not figure it out. You know, I took a couple months and they finally, you know, I was thinking all the time, they started taking these kids. Well, and they didn't just drink either, you know, but there'd be like 200 young people, like 21 or 10 people, not drinking, you know, and like laughing and playing music and smoking all the cigarettes, not drinking. I mean, it didn't occur to me, and I'd go, I'd be like carrying a bottle of wine, you know, and then like, I mean, when they were playing ping pong, like, they were like, you know, playing, I was like, I know, it's like daytime, and they were like, how long do you have? And I was like, my body lasts another couple of hours, so I mean, that'd be good. You know, and they didn't pay me, and they finally, you know, started to, like, leave big books out around the house, still didn't get it. And then they finally started talking to me about what their lives were like now. You know, and these were clean guys. I mean, they were, like, dress nice, they were taking showers, they had jobs, they talked to their mom, you know, they were not losers. So, but they related to my loserness. And, you know, they started telling me these stories of, like, getting sober and being painful about it. And then still, and they started to worry about, like, where my girls are. Like, where do you think we go from 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night? Like, when we leave you here and you're drunken there. And, I get it. And I thought, like, that's really good for them. Like, I'm glad that they need to be sober. Like, their stories are really awful. You know, and inside, I'm thinking, like, I'm just going to kill myself. This is so, like, there's nobody left. Everybody hates me. And, you know, I mean, these guys, like, all they were trying to do is, like, to get me to be like, come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm thinking, like, they weren't even going to want me anymore, you know. Because I thought they didn't know I was drinking. Now, I was pretty obviously disgusting, and I smelled really bad, like alcohol and whatever else. But, you know, I was convinced I had no idea that I was drunk. And, you know, so one night, I went over to meet up with some friends, and I was going to tell myself after the party, because I couldn't take it anymore. I could not take that waking up every morning and living the same life. Being uncomfortable until I drank, and then drinking too much, and being uncomfortable, and then just, you know, like, serving up and being uncomfortable again. You know, I mean, like, the cycle never ended. It didn't matter what happened, I was always uncomfortable somehow until I drank. And there was that, like, brief moment of respite, and then it would come again. And I couldn't take it more soon, I was gonna kill myself. Like, I'm a very guilty person, I realized I feel bad, but I killed myself. So I figured if I drove over the bridge, at just the right angle, it would look like a really bad crash, but there's no way I could survive it. My parents would feel like it was a very tragic accident, and they wouldn't feel bad to kill myself. So I'm on my way, driving over the bridge, but I've also been very courteous, and I found a great, I found a great picture of me. I left my bed, but when the, you know, funeral, when they post the picture, they would have a good picture of me. You know, because I was really concerned about this, and, I thought, like, somehow that would ease the pain. It was like, if they had just a picture, like, they would no longer be uncomfortable about the fact that I was dead. So, and I'm getting ready to drive, and I have a moment of clarity, you know, and I had a few spiritual awakening, and I knew that I was alcoholic, and I knew that what these guys had was something that I could, you know, only hope to achieve, and that the way I couldn't tell myself that night, you know, and I called these guys. It was like 7:50 on Friday night. When we didn't get your class, I called them and they said, wait there. I was coming out, get off the road, go see and kill us. And wait there. And they come pick me up. And they came and picked me up, and we drove to this meeting. And I got there, and it was like 220 young guys and like four women. And I was really drunk, and I thought, like, I can do this. So this is what I really was, like, 220 young guys and five women. I can certainly get to there and this. And, you know, I think I raised my hand, I think, you know, I said something, but they all looked at me, you know, somebody decided to send me a mirror, they just kind of like looked at me, and, you know, just someone kind of snapped at me and said, I'm gonna smile for you. And I was like, okay, whatever. And, you know, I started, like, serving up in these guys' houses that night, you know, so I'm physically disgusted. I live with problems, I had ideas. I was disgusted by the time I got sober. And, you know, so I was getting served in these guys' houses, and speaking and the whole disgustingness, you know, speaking and all sorts of nasty. And, but the next night was midnight, you know, and the woman who took me to class, she was fascinating, her fiance, took me to class. It was October in D.C., and it was really cold. I'm not going out the white field and under a field. And he took me and put me in the fire, for a gas, and just, closed me off. Because he was like, you gotta go to Midtown, and you can't go like this. And, I got there and looked at Midtown smoking, which probably was the rest of me and stopped from smoking. It was wonderful. And Midtown and I was 350 people, and, passed away in the smoking, so everybody smoked. And, I sat there and people had my cigarettes, people had my coffee because they wouldn't let me hold it because I was so sleepy. And somebody told me that skin I liked chest. And, I thought they were yelling at me because I'm the time to cry off and they're like, keep doing this. And I thought they were yelling at me. And, I was like crying and, because I thought everybody hated me. And, but the cool thing was that at Midtown, the other 200 women showed up because I was women's weekend that weekend. And that's why none of the women were at the meeting. So that was disappointing to me, but, they were there, they came, I showed the luxury of the certain rehab, because I ended up having two seizures and the detox, and, the equipment rehab and the whole thing, but, I had a sponsor, she's gone crazy, so I got a new sponsor, she ended up becoming a pastor, religious, and gone crazy, and then another sponsor, she just took me on, and she did stuff, and she just was really involved in service, and I was really uncomfortable, walking into a meeting and, having people, shake their hand was too much for me, because they were, looking at me, this is too much for me, I was man, I would be, blown up right now. So my was taking everywhere, so she had been really uncomfortable. It's like she told me that she'd been really uncomfortable, so it made me feel better because I thought, okay, so yes, she's really uncomfortable too. Sent off cigarettes and started showing me the stress, And I don't particularly remember working a lot of stuff for the first couple months, but I know that I feel so good, and that I was here, and that really we can talk about it. And I honestly don't really remember her lot. I'm sorry, I'm going late, but I'll tell you really quickly. Because the story is amazing on this side. And I was like 10 months later. At that time I had worked, I'd been working stuff and I was doing stuff. And these two guys, Mike and Hannah, had moved on campus. And so Jeremy was moving down and I was doing the style that I didn't know anymore. I had a job, I didn't care about anymore. And so Jeremy was like, I'm moving to campus, we're leaving at 2:00 a.m. And I thought, I didn't get there, right? So, Danny and I got in the car and we drove to Tampa, I thought, I saw him, next week or, this weekend or whatever, and I went to Spain for a really long time. And, a couple months later, Monkey Todd moved on. We went and picked up Monkey Todd, and Monkey Todd and I drove down the Big Monkey, which was just really awful pickup truck, but it didn't even make it out of Virginia, because he had failed to mention that there was no coolant system in the truck. That the coolant was actually in the mix-up. Which currently was truck, it does not work that way. You have to have something that cold broken. So the truck overheated while he was asleep, and I kept driving to the window. And so eventually the whole engine just blew up on the Big Monkey, and I looked at it, took a while to punch the truck, go down. We placed chairs in the back, so here and the other guy could sit in the back, and I drove the whole way down. And it's pretty miserable, but we got down here, and there's not a whole lot of other young people, grab these random people, and it's so great to come here and see people that we knew when we got down here, that we found, and we had this real little crew, and we'd have these class meetings, and people would be dipping and smoking out in Harris, and he'd freak out about it because he's dying of cancer, and doing all kinds of stuff. It was fun, but I was the only girl, so go pick up these girls, and half of them were, again, not so far, but half of them were just stripping, so we'd go drop them off at the strip club, and we'd pick them up and bring them to the meeting, and it was such a great time, and I was actually really, really miserable, because I didn't have any girlfriends, and that's why I had years having women in my life. And, my sponsor was going to my pastor. So I didn't care, I had attention, I had friends, and, I started getting more involved in that kind of service, and then, so we found that we got a church, turned the young people sick. We started to get this whole little group together, and we had tons of the young people, and, it was a pretty cool thing, and, I finally moved back, home, I found girlfriends, and, we had the swimmers weekend, and I made it to the next year after that. That first weekend I was getting so good, hoping I'd make them come home. And then the next time I made it, and the women's weekend was always something that was really fun in my life, and that's one of the reasons that there's going to be this awesome women's weekend down here, and I'm jumping around and trying to get done in time. But all the women that are here and have no idea where they're going, just go. It's so worth it. And for the guys, just go. It's the coolest experience, I really had zero interest in having female friends for a lot of reasons. But one, because when I was drinking, if I needed alcohol, I was going to get it from my dad. And the women were always going to be competition. So recently, I came and had my ass, the more alcohol I was going to get. It was a very simple mathematical equation in my head. And then I got so real, I wasn't hanging out with girls. I was really interested in hanging out with girls. And eventually I got changed, and I had a lot of really amazing women feeling in my life. A lot of that was from stuff I was doing this weekend. I was really uncomfortable. Really hated being wrong. Really hated the girly talk. Look at them. Look at my dating this week. I hated that stuff. It was painful to me. But a lot of being around these women, I feel like I have all these really cool shared experiences with people. He got to celebrate her 1 year at work, saw the road on the 4th of July weekend, God, she was such a mess, she was just crazy, a woman that came to my house trying to mess. Those were just beautiful women, took all these women I've left up, and I was guys, there's a lot of you bakers that left up to me, and have really turned into something, something solid, this was a special place in my heart. This was really an amazing, amazing thing, from where we started, in this living room, there's dipping and spitting on the floor that I had to sleep on because I actually didn't have a place to live, that was the other part of this. I just kind of moved down, I didn't have anywhere to live, so I lived on the couch and on the floor, and people would come stay, they would get the couch, I would get the floor, it was pretty awful. I'm so grateful that I got to do stuff like that, that was stuff like be crazy and do conferences and all that crazy, crazy stuff, I'm really grateful and how that. A year ago, my husband and I moved down to the beach, Saturday Beach. We moved to Rock Lake, which was a crazy place. And we moved to Saturday Beach, and I was 300 yards from the ocean. Last weekend it was so cold, there was 100 men with you in the little canal by half naked, baby, and it was nice. And that's really cool stuff to me today. I still have a career. I work at this intensive residential treatment center for kids, which is the kids that are, gotten kicked out of foster homes and other places, and removed from the parents because their behaviors are so bad. And they're incredibly violent, aggressive children, and I absolutely love that idea. I found something that I love, and I was active in my classroom, I sponsor a lot of girls, I talk to my sponsor on a regular basis, I have a home group that I'm a part of. I have friends on a part of their life and they're a part of my life today, and all of that stuff is it's wonderful, and it's I have a God in my life that, I know that I'm going to be taken care of, really quick on this, but 2 years ago I had brain surgery, or 2.5 years ago, and there was going to be a kind of brain surgery that nobody wanted to do, many doctors in the country wanted to do it. Because they were kind of the outcome's not going to be good, they're very concerned about their stats, and they didn't want to do it. They were so concerned that, even if I got that, I wasn't going to wake up. So I was 23 years old, 7 years sober, and the chances of waking up were pretty slim. The alcohol tonight was with me. My sponsor and all my girlfriends were there, and they took care of, this is actually 2 weeks after I got married, that I got stressed before I got there, the alcohol challenge was there. There was a meeting at my house, people fed me, they came and they did everything for me, obviously I survived the surgery, it went very well. My life is better than I could ever hope for, all I wanted out of life was possibly, live in a trailer park with less of 30 year old kids, hang out with cigarettes, having some guy that would buy me alcohol. That was really the only goal I had in life today. And today, I want whatever I can have, I want the best life I can possibly have, and my friend pushes me to be a better person on a daily basis, she pushes me to go to school and to go to job board and Starbucks, and to find something that I want to do, and my life is amazing today, if your life is not amazing today, or you do not have a survivor, a home group, or a sponsor, find the group of people that are actually smoking that look happier than you do a lot of time to them, find the group that's doing better than you, and stick with them, and then stay in the group.